Hello and welcome to the BizNews Breakfast Briefing. I'm Lucy Ferreira for BizNews.com. It's Monday, the 15th of August, and if you've been following the briefing, you'll know that Alec Hogg and I experimented with a video version of the Breakfast Briefing last week. We've decided to revert back to the audio-only version today after looking at the numbers and seeing that the community prefers an audio-only update in the morning. Before we hear from Alec with his morning market update and the FT's global news briefing, there are a couple of stories that will be going up on biznews.com today that are really worth keeping an eye out for. Michael Apple reports from a panel of Israeli water experts who were in Johannesburg to share world-leading technology that could help turn the country's ailing water infrastructure around. And Alec Hogg had two fascinating interviews. Musi Maimani was in studio with us, where he unpacked his disruptive busy work within the political sphere, the key takeaway being that he is ready to be president come 2024. We also had renowned South African entrepreneur and founder of Rain, Paul Harris, in studio with us, sharing why a merger with Rain is a far more compelling alternative for telecom stakeholders than being swallowed up by MTN. Those stories will be up on biznews.com today. But for now, it's over to Alec with an update on the markets.
Thank you, Lucy. As you mentioned, we're back to the old format. Well, good morning from me. It's Monday, the 15th of August, and a little celebration. On Friday, the American markets, which really influence what happens here in South Africa, had a particularly good session. The S&P 500 was up by 1.7% and the Nasdaq composite up by more than 2%. Reason for that is that investors in America are anticipating a slightly reduced increase in interest rates next time around, and that is on the back of inflation that is now starting to come a little bit more reasonable. On Wednesday, the July figure for inflation came out at 8.5%. That's down from the peak of 9.1% for June. It's the first time this year that inflation has done better than had been anticipated in the market. No wonder they are celebrating. Wall Street was up by 3% roughly, the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq composite. This is the fourth week in a row that those major indices have gone stronger. The Nasdaq now very clearly back into a bull market. Other good news on the inflation front, which does seem to be dominating investor sentiment right now, is that shipping rates and the global commodity prices are continuing to fall. We did see that the Brent crude price was down to $98 a barrel on Friday. That's down by about another dollar, but it's now settled under $100 a barrel, which investors are quite enjoying. Also, other good news to come out in the United States was the consumer sentiment survey from the University of Michigan. Now, this is a very important indicator of how people are feeling in the economy. That was 51.5 in July, a little bit higher than 50%. Anything over 50% means people are more optimistic than pessimistic. The August figure was at 55.1, so that index was up quite strongly in August, suggesting again that consumers are now looking forward to a better future. The JSE was down slightly on Friday, just under 1%. Remember, its decline came as the US markets had opened a little softer, so no surprise there. That was down by 0.8%. The Rand, however, has continued its recent run, gained 3 cents against the US dollar this morning, trading at 16 Rand 23, 16 cents against the pound, we're at 19 Rand 67 today, and 13 cents against the euro, we're at 16 Rand 64. The gold price was up by $12 an ounce, above $1,800 again. 1,802 is what it's trading at right now. But the big story in the US markets outside of equities is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is just under $25,000 for a coin, up by 1.25% over the weekend. It's sitting at 24,881. And the reason for that is that asset managers, the big guys, are putting money now on crypto. They're betting that Bitcoin is not a flash in the pan, as some of these very ignorant local commentators here in South Africa continue to beat that drum, and that indeed it is something that is going to be with us for a long, long time. Over the past week, we had news that Aberdeen, which is one of the biggest asset managers in the UK, has bought a stake in a digital assets exchange called Archax. It also has the right to put a member of its team onto the board, so taking that very seriously. BlackRock, whose CEO Larry Fink was one of the biggest critics of Bitcoin a few years ago, has now gone big on a transaction with Coinbase. It's also created a Bitcoin trust for institutional investors to invest in. Charles Schwab, one of the biggest stockbrokers in the United States, has created an exchange-traded fund where people can invest in Bitcoin in the whole Bitcoin theme without actually having to buy the coins. And then Schroders, the biggest asset manager in the UK, has bought a stake in digital assets manager Fortius. So there is a strong move from the institutions, from the establishment, if you like, to go into the crypto area. And Bitcoin is certainly being, well, Bitcoin being the major crypto asset, has been appreciating that attention. Here on the local front, I had a really interesting interview on Friday with Paul Harris, a man I've known for literally decades. He used to be, well, head boy of Maritzburg College, so comes from a similar part of the world that I do. And he was one of the co-founders of what is today First Rand. And it's quite interesting to go back there. It was almost 25 years ago that Harris, Lowry Dippinar, and GT Ferreira took their little organization, RMB, Rand Merchant Bank, which had been created a few years earlier by Johan Rupert. So they'd bought control of that company from Rupert, who had moved on to the family business, the Rembrandt business. Anyway, they took that company and merged it with First National Bank, which was has been around in South Africa. It was the old Barclays Bank since the 1850s. So it was this venerable institution and this smaller, more innovative operation that got together, and today we have First Rand, which is the most valuable financial services business on the African continent. Paul's trying to do it again. He's in his 70s now, but very sharp, as you can see from the interview, which is on YouTube. So go onto the BizNews TV channel on YouTube. And what he thinks is that by putting together the speedboat called Rain, where you've got guys like Michael Jordaan, Willem Roos, and a host of other very innovative thinkers, together with Telkom, you put the two together, you could really create something special in the same way as they created First Rand. Well, that's his view. He's not the only bidder, though. The Telkom board wants to unlock value. The shares are trading at around two-thirds of the net asset value. Telkom has entertained a acquisition offer from MTN, which has much deeper pockets than Paul Harris does. And we'll see what comes of that now that Rain has come to the party. And then there's an organization called the Toto Consortium, which is led by one Bongani Gigaba. Interesting surname, that one. Also, this fellow was a consultant to President Jacob Zuma in the presidency in 2010 to 2012. Apparently, they want to buy government stake, the 40% that government owns in Telkom. The number that's being touted around is 7 billion rand, which is quite a discount to the likely value of Telkom in any kind of a transaction. So we'll see how that one pans out, and indeed whether there are any more offers that come forward. Another thing on the local front that I want to just make mention of before we leave this morning to join our partners at the Financial Times in London for their update for today is some of those industrial shares that Piet Viljoen has been waving the flag about on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange are continuing to quietly get on with their business and deliver excellent returns to those who've invested in them. Novus last week, this is a publishing company, printing company, was up 18% and it's now trading at 2.95 rand. You could have bought those shares in mid-2020 at 52 cents. That's the spin-off from Naspers, which is now an independent organization doing very well. Reunert, well-known industrial company here in South Africa, up 17% those shares in the past week, now trading at 47 rand. 2 weeks ago, they were at 36 rand. Hulamin, I've mentioned this a few times, 2.79 rand it closed on Friday, up 17% in the past week. You could have got that at just over 2 Rand a few weeks ago. Murray and Roberts is one I hadn't picked up until now. 11 Rand 89, up 14% last week. Murray and Roberts in mid-2020 was easily bought at 3 Rand 75. So there's a fantastic return from the one-time construction blue chip, which fell on hard times but seems to have got itself well recovered now. And then finally, Spar, a retailing firm, was up 13% last week to 153 Rand a share from about 130 2 weeks ago. So it just shows that if you look in the right places, you can certainly make an excellent return here on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Just to close off with, getting back to crypto, the Geltech basket is now trading at 483 Rand and 20 per unit. That's up 4%. I've got a webinar tomorrow with a team from Geltech where we're going to be having a look at cryptocurrencies and the way forward. Another explanatory webinar, but one that is highly interactive. So please sign up to that. You can get all the details on the BizNews site. That should be very interesting, especially given the way that Bitcoin has jumped in the past few weeks. Indeed, it's not long ago that we were looking at it falling below $20,000 a Bitcoin. It's now at nearly $25,000.
Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Monday, August 15th, and this is your FT News Briefing. Pakistan has depleted its foreign reserves, and Saudi Arabia is stepping in to help. Oil prices have fallen a lot in the last several weeks. We'll look at why and how long this could last. Plus, we'll dig into what a major U.S. spending bill could mean for share buybacks. I'm Joanna Gao, in for Mark Filipino, and here's the news you need to start your day. Saudi Arabia has agreed to renew a $3 billion deposit at Pakistan's central bank, the FT has learned. This deposit will shore up Pakistan's depleted foreign reserves. And it comes just as Islamabad is negotiating an aid package with the International Monetary Fund. Last month, the IMF agreed to increase its loans to Pakistan, but on the condition that Pakistan receive financial support from elsewhere. American and European drivers have been getting some relief at the pump. Lower gas prices have followed falling oil prices over the last couple of months. After Russia's invasion of Ukraine, crude oil hit a high of $120 a barrel. Now, it's below $100. We asked the FT's Derek Brower what's behind this.
It's really about three R's, I would say. Recession, fears of recession. Recessions tend to kill oil demand growth. Russia, the notion that Russian production was going to collapse has not materialized. And then the third R is releases of oil from the US and other Western countries' strategic emergency stockpiles of oil to offset what they expected to be big drops in supply from Russia as sanctions tightened on Russia following its invasion of Ukraine. But actually what's happened is Russia has managed to keep sending oil out at greater volumes than people expected. And yet all of this oil from the emergency stockpiles around the world has seeped into the market. So that's driven prices down on the supply side.
We just saw Saudi Aramco post record profits for the last quarter, a reflection of high oil prices. Other oil majors also reported record profits. What do falling prices mean for oil companies?
The next quarter won't be as robust in terms of profits and dividends and so on as the one that's just passed. But oil companies in general, Saudi Aramco, which reported yesterday, is a bit of an exception. But oil companies in general, especially ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, Total, they're really price takers more than price makers. So they do very well when the oil price is going up, you know, for reasons that may or may not be connected to their own decisions and their strategy and so on. And they do very badly, as they did during the pandemic oil crash, when prices fall. So to answer your question, the earnings for the oil majors in the next few months, they are going to reflect pretty much directly what the oil price does. And as I say, there's quite a lot of volatility expected in the market in the coming months.
What are you watching for in oil markets in the months ahead?
So I think the oil market will be really focused on the two big consumers in the world, the US and China. And the first question is whether the US is heading into recession. And then the second part of that is whether China is going to emerge from COVID lockdowns and consume oil with the same almost insatiable thirst that it had before the lockdowns took hold and dampened some of its demand. So those are the two really big moving parts. If the US goes into recession, that'll hurt demand for oil in the biggest petroleum market in the world. If China emerges from the COVID lockdowns with a much healthier economy and more thirst for oil, that will lift demand from the second biggest petroleum market in the world.
Derek Brower is the FT's US energy editor. In the U.S., President Joe Biden plans to sign a $700 billion spending bill into law this week. The Inflation Reduction Act is aimed at the climate, healthcare, and lowering the deficit. It also raises corporate taxes. Corporate America is not happy, of course. One big change is a new minimum corporate tax rate of 15%. And there's also a new 1% tax on share buybacks. That's when companies buy their shares back from investors. A gift to shareholders that tends to boost the price. The FT's Ethan Wu explains why lawmakers included this.
This is an idea that gained a lot of momentum among Democrats in 2021. And the argument they'll make here is that firms have, and the implication is somewhat selfishly, chosen to do stock buybacks to boost share prices at the expense of investing in workers and investing in equipment. That's the argument they'll make.
So how do corporations justify share buybacks? It's pretty standard, actually. Can you remind us of the business rationale?
For companies, share buybacks are a really attractive way to return cash that they have to shareholders when they don't have good investment opportunities to use that cash on. And you know, the traditional way that you would return cash to shareholders is through dividends. But the issue with dividends is that they're often more committal than share buybacks. Once you raise your dividend or start paying a dividend, it's a little bit difficult to lower it again or to stop paying it. With stock buybacks, it's more flexible. You can do one round of stock buybacks when you have the cash on hand. And because this tool is so flexible for companies, you've seen even someone like Warren Buffett, who's really like a, you know, kind of a consummate long-termist, in the height of the bull market in 2020 and 2021, start to issue share buybacks at Berkshire Hathaway just because it was such a useful tool for him to return money to shareholders.
How much of an impact will the tax actually have on corporate earnings?
I've been surprised by how not worried investors have been about these taxes, which isn't to say that they love them, which isn't to say that they're great, but they're just rather small overall. And just to start with the impact on corporations, many big banks that have studied this are projecting a small hit to earnings. That hit will be the sharpest at companies that do a lot of buybacks and pay currently low corporate tax rates. So, you know, famously a lot of tech companies. But the magnitude of the earnings hit that we're talking about here is really surprisingly small.
And why is that?
I think the biggest reason is that the tax rate, 1% on net share repurchases, is really quite small overall. This is half of the 2% rate that Senators Ron Wyden and Sherrod Brown had proposed last year. And it's just not expected to raise that much money overall and to affect corporate behavior all that much.
That's FT financial reporter Ethan Wu. Before we go, Mexico's president Andrés Manuel López Obrador wants to shake up his country's beer industry. Most production happens in the north of the country, which is in a severe drought. President Obrador blasted beer makers for using water from dwindling aquifers. The industry has denied that. Last week, Obrador demanded a halt to brewing in the north. He wants production to shift south. Mexico is one of the world's biggest beer exporters, thanks to the popularity of Corona, Modelo, and other brands. You can read more on all of these stories at FT.com. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
And that's all from the briefing for today. If you enjoyed this episode, follow BizNews Radio now to get all of our interviews and daily market updates as soon as they're published on your podcast platform.